G'day everybody, welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast.
I'm Jacob Meyer.
And I'm Glenn Hill, and today we're going to continue our discussion from the previous episode about serving strategy. And specifically, we got a couple emails from listeners who were asking about how the second serve ties into serving strategy. And Jake, I think you have a pretty strong statement to make to open the discussion on that.
Well, my first reaction was you don't have a second serve, which is probably a poor way of saying don't think about things in terms of first and second serves, but just think in terms of, well, what's my serving strategy?
Right. So this is something that I've noticed most players do, is they have a first serve and then they have a second serve. And I don't mean in terms of they go out and they play a point and then they get to attempt a first serve, and then when they miss, they have a second serve. Obviously, that's the structure of serving in the sport of tennis. What I'm talking about is they have a type of serve that they think of as their first serve, and then a type of serve that they think of as their second serve. And their first serve is the more aggressive, higher risk serve. You know, maybe it's flatter, it's faster. And they have a spinnier version of their serve for their quote unquote second serve. And like people I've noticed will talk about, I was missing all my first serves, so I started hitting my second serve as my first serve, as an example. And I think what you're getting at, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we don't want to think about serving in those terms. We don't want to think about having a first serve and having a second serve like that.
That's right. That example that you gave is exactly the one that I would point to when people say, oh, I used my second serve as my first serve. That betrays the thought process that I think is essentially poisonous to your serving strategy, right? Like, you don't, or you shouldn't have just one thing that you do for a second serve. You shouldn't have such a great divide between the first and second serves. What you should have is a serve that gives you options, and you should be able to make choices based on the circumstances and the opponent and the day, et cetera, how you're going to use your serve on any given day. So it shouldn't be this clear, like, I use, you know, this second serve is like just this one kind of shot thing. That's just not the right way to think about it.
Yes, we don't want to think about shot things.
Nice.
So thank you. One of the things that stands out to me is an example of a player who I think employs, and this might shock some people, but employs intelligent serving strategy, is Nick Kyrgios, who will occasionally, and by occasion I mean sometimes frequently, bust out 130 mile an hour second serves. The idea is, look, if I only think of myself as having two serves, a first serve and a second serve, I'm handcuffing myself with serving strategy. I'm limiting my options with this binary choice. And the reality is, look, we don't expect that everybody listening is going to have eight variations of their serve they can hit. You know, when we think about serves, for myself, I might think about, you know, my quote-unquote flat serve, which is really like a fast topspin serve, but then I'll have more of a topspin slice, and then a slower, more spinny topspin, and then a ball that'll kick left to right for me serving as a right-hander. And there's lots of variations of those, like combinations there of different speeds, different spin levels. And if you're listening, and you might have access to all those different types of serves, but you also might not. The important thing is that you are working on developing some variations of your serve, so that if you do hit, let's say, a slice serve, you have maybe two or three options there in varying spin and speed levels off the same ball toss. And then you get to employ real strategy that goes beyond which part of the box you're going to hit the serve to. So as an example, let's say that I am serving against somebody and they are the type of person who likes to really step in and attack the second serve. And if all I have is like a slow rolling top spinny slicer that doesn't have a lot of velocity on it, then I don't have a lot of options. All I can really realistically vary about the serve to that player is where in the box I serve it. And in those kind of circumstances, I'm going to tend to want to serve more at the body, because if they're stepping in to take it earlier, then, you know, I have a chance of jamming them and rushing them. But if I have off the same ball toss, a variation on that serve that has more velocity than usual and a little more movement side to side and maybe less up and down, less topspin, a little more slice to it, I can use that to jam that player far more effectively than the slower version of that serve. So that would be an example of maybe having two variations on a second serve. And then the other part of it is if I hit one of them two or three times in a row and then switch the other one that has a different pace to it, the rhythm of the return changes and people are more likely to mistime the return. And then we get back to these same ideas that we had from the previous podcast episode, where we're not just serving to hit aces, we're serving to draw errors, we're serving to draw the right type of first ball for us to hit. And we can do that through changing spins and speeds and paces. So how does this fit in for you, Jake, when you talk about serving with the players that you work with?
That's a good question. You know, so much depends on the individual player and where they're coming from. The thing that I've had in the back of my mind when we started talking about this is actually WTA players in particular, where, I mean, I know I don't spend most of my time on the WTA, but I have one player in particular that I've done some work with, hits a really good kick serve. Mm-hmm. She's not a really tall girl, but she's got just a really good kicker, like heavy, like she has a heavy game, in fact. But she stands in stark contrast to a lot of the people that she plays against and to some of the other women that we've worked with. And there's, I mean, this is a touchy subject in some ways, but there's a stereotype basically on the WTA about second serves, that the women just don't do a good job serving, I think, is how we generally think about it. But when we look more closely at it, the first serves really are getting pretty good. Like some of these girls are serving actually big, like they're serving 110 miles an hour. You know, they're serving like 175, 180 kilometers. And, you know, they're hitting spots. So, like,
sure,
they're capable of acing the guys. Like, they're holding their own. But then the drop-off between the first serve and the second serve is huge in terms of velocity.
Absolutely.
And so many times the spin rate on the serve is really, really low. So it becomes a bit of a sitting duck. And the WTA players in particular are also known as good returners. And so we see essentially really low-quality second serves, really good returning equals lots of breaks. So this player in particular, I think what they're able to do with their second serve, right, is use it a lot more like their first serve, which stands in contrast to a lot of the WTA players. Now, interestingly enough for her, she doesn't really have a big, flat, like 110, 115 mile an hour first serve where she's hitting aces. She actually has essentially hits the same serve on both shots, whether it's the first serve or the second service, she essentially hits the same ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So sometimes people will be like, oh yeah, like her first serve is not that great. And the same person would be like, their second serve is awesome. And it's like, well, that's kind of a funny way to think about it, right?
Sure.
Like, how well is she really using her serve? So for that player in particular, it's, well, let's use your serve more tactically because this is what you can do with the ball. This is how you can manipulate it. How do we take that and put it together into patterns that are going to be winning patterns for you, right?
Right.
With most of the guys that we work with on the tour level, the first thing that we address is most guys come in with a concept from when they were much, much younger that their second serve has to be slow, that it has to be spinny, and that essentially it has to be a weakness. And so we really start addressing that concept, which is where we started this podcast, saying something kind of funny like, you know, you don't have a second serve.
Right.
Because we want to get their attention. We want to say, what do you mean? Of course I do. Like, obviously, you have to hit second serves. You should be hitting second serves. I actually believe that you shouldn't be making all your first serves, otherwise you're not doing a good job. Fernando Verdasco, shout out to the old school Fernando there because he's a little different now. But I don't know. I mean, how much does that answer your question? Like, there's so many places that we can sort of start with players.
Absolutely. Well, so there's a few things there that really stand out to me that I'd like to latch onto and discuss a little more. And one of them is this idea of risk management. We've talked about risk management in the podcast before regarding patterns and point construction, and serving is no different. And this is part of the reason why people, I think, tend to separate this idea of having a first serve and having a second serve is That's a very kind of simple way of thinking about risk management when it comes to serving. And this is why I think it's important to have an overarching serving strategy that also encompasses second serves, is understanding the context of when you're hitting a serve and when it's appropriate to elevate your risk. So let's say that I am serving and I've got an opponent who has started to really step up and attack my second serve, which I'm hitting, you know, a pretty traditional kick serve right now, up at this point in this game or up to this point in this match. And I happen to get up 40 love on my serve. And I know this guy's about to step in and attack my second serve again. This would be a perfect opportunity to throw up my normal kicker toss and then just absolutely crush a serve at, you know, on 115, 120 straight at him. Right? And no, am I going to make this serve? My normal second serve, I'm probably going to make about 95 to 97% of the time.
Okay.
Right? The types of serve that I would normally hit as a second serve. But this one I might only make 50 or 60% of the time. But the point of it isn't that I'm necessarily even going to win this point, because if I hit the double fault there, then I would still expect from 40-15 that I'm going to get out of that game with a hole. The odds are very strongly in my favor of doing so. But what I am doing is I'm setting the stage for future second serve points, because now in the back of his head, he has that question, especially if I make this, of, is this guy going to hit a spinny, like more shaped, kind of curving second serve, or is he going to just throw up the same toss and just crush one at me? And now that's going to make him consider his positioning. It's going to make him consider his aggression level on the second serve. That's going to change the way that he thinks about hitting second serves moving forward. And that ties into the other thought that I had, which was about the way that you said people talked about this female player that you work with and her, how her first serve is kind of mediocre, but then she's got this really great second serve. I think that speaks very powerfully to the way returners have a very differing psychology in the way they return first serves versus second serves. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how we can use that differing psychology and implement it in our serving strategy.
Yeah, so the example that you gave, I think, is really good. It's exactly what Kyrgios does routinely as part of his overall serving strategy, is when he's ahead in a game and a guy's like, okay, you know, I'm going to take a chance and I'm going to try and, you know, attack when a Nick's second serves. He sees you standing in just a step closer than normal. He's cranking it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he just has a natural sense for this kind of strategy. Okay, he's not breaking down the film and spending hours developing like Bill Belichick, you know, plays here. Okay, this isn't the X's and O's detail oriented guy. He just has a sense for, like, if you think you're gonna get the better of me, I'm gonna surprise you and try and shove this ball down your throat. Not in a mean way, but in a, like, I'm serving, I'm going to win this game.
Right.
He's going to win every game he's serving. That's his mentality.
Sure.
And that's a good mentality for a competitor to have in terms of getting results. So, now I've gone and forgotten your question.
Just the question was, how can we use the idea that people have very different psychologies or different strategies on their return of serve between first and second serve returns against them.
Right.
And maybe an example would be what's something that we can do on first serves that takes advantage of the, what I think is traditionally a more defensive returning kind of mentality that people have returning first serves. How can we use that against them?
Right. So the reason that this works for Kyrgios, or the reason it works in your example that sometimes we gloss over, like you said, oh, I might absolutely crush that serve and hit a 115 second serve, like, right at the guy. And a lot of people are going to be thinking, like, dude, I wish I could hit 115 mile an hour second serve, right? It's like, right, but you're glossing over the really important part here, which is I'm going to hit a ball a lot faster than what the guy is expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, right, the success is built upon this guy being out of position relative to what I'm going to do, right? And that's where the psychology comes in. So returning firsters, most people are standing further back, giving themselves more time. So if you hit a ball right to him, right, and we say not right at him anymore, now it's right to him,
mm-hmm.
and you hit it 115, that might be fine. On the tour, that's no big deal. Guys are going to eat that for lunch.
Yeah.
But also on the tour, a lot of guys are coached to move in 2, 3, even 4 steps and try and take away time and attack a second serve because they're expecting something slower and higher. So if you change what they're expecting and you go now fast and low and into the body, they don't have enough time to react, and boom, you can get free points off second serves.
Mm.
So what you have to look at all the time is what is your opponent expecting and what are they actually trying to do, right? So the pro example of this is Rafael Nadal on the clay. He's standing really, really far back, first and second serves. Like, if you haven't been watching him the past couple of weeks, watch him, because sometimes you can't see him in the screen if they show the wrong camera angle. And that's not an exaggeration,
right?
So he's standing so far back, like, you hitting a serve to the middle of the box at any speed isn't hurting him. It's just a ground stroke by the time it gets to him.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. So you need to adapt your serving strategy, right? Mm-hmm. And some people are taking this extreme, like Craig O'Shancy published some stuff a couple weeks ago saying, like, hit an underarm serve. This guy's like 40 meters away.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. Hit a drop shot serve and you might actually win the point. But do something to make him change what he's doing, right?
Yeah.
And what it sounds like you're really talking about, and what I really like, is that you're just talking about using a more sophisticated strategy that's going to be more adaptable to a much larger set of circumstances. So, like you said at the very beginning of one of our topics a few minutes ago, you know, hitting a slow second serve is just a really sort of oversimplistic way of handling risk management.
Mm-hmm.
It's not wrong. It's just really simple.
Right.
Like, that's what we did when we're beginners, right?
Yes.
So, like, if you have a coach and they're coaching a beginner and they're just saying, like, hey, just get your second serve in, hit it really slow, doesn't mean he's an idiot. Doesn't mean he's saying something wrong.
No.
He's just coaching to that level.
Yes.
Saying, like, this is, like, you maybe don't have very many options here, right? Your only option is to kind of hit what we would essentially say a not very good shot. And you just get it in,
but,
right?
But let's an extremely safe shot.
Let's hit an extremely safe shot. That's the nice way of saying it, right?
Well, but I mean, that's a reality when we look at any stroke in tennis. I mean, I can go out there and make very, very few errors, right? I mean, I can do that, but but depending on my level, that might involve hitting a soft ball into the very center of the court. They might hit a bunch of winners on me, but I'm not going to hit very many errors.
Right.
But I'm still going to lose a lot of points because they're hitting a bunch of winners because I'm giving them a very easy shot to attack in order for me to be safe. And that's where I think people tend to fall flat a little bit on the second serve. I think an important part of the idea here too, though, is the more that you work on developing your serve and developing options, then the more options you have available with which to build a cohesive strategy. The more you can surprise somebody. The more you can, if I can hit 5 different serves all off the same toss, then it becomes exponentially more difficult for my opponent to anticipate what I'm about to do.
And this is one of the things that really bears being specific about. I mean, we could do hours and hours of recording and podcasting on serving, right? Because you can get as deep into strategy or serving as any other part of the game, right? But the nature of surprise is really important here. Because surprise creates a different set of circumstances for your opponent,
mm-hmm.
right? And where that becomes important is because it's going to have consequences. Like, it's going to affect their reaction time. It's going to affect their stability. It's going to affect their decision-making and shot selection a lot of the times. So you can look at this on, you know, at the extreme, like, oh, this guy's standing in really close because he's expecting a super slow serve, and I'm just going to hit, you know, what I think of, quote unquote, air quotes here, as my first serve right at him. And that's a good little tactic, right? Like, that's a nice setup that we know works well. But what you want to realize is the reason that that works is because of all the stuff going on with your opponent. There's a reason that he's not able to hit a good shot in those circumstances. And it's going to be partially because he has less time, and that's a big deal. There's more than one way to give someone less time, right? The way we think about is, well, I hit it faster, or I stand closer. I physically take away the time. The other way to do it is essentially with some confusion.
Sure.
So that their brain just doesn't work as quickly, or you give them too many things to focus on so they can't lock in time. And then they effectively have less time. And that's all that matters, is that they effectively can't do the thing that they need to do in order to put a quality shot in.
Right. And that's actually, I think, a very powerful idea, because there's a lot of very good science that talks about reaction time of human beings and what can affect reaction time. And when we have the ability to anticipate a probable outcome of something that's about to happen, like let's say my opponent's about to serve, and I suspect ahead of time, for whatever reason, that they're going to hit a wide serve on the deuce court, if I think that's coming, just the thought that it's coming actually pre-activates some pre-existing neural networks related to hitting returns that are for the wide serve. And funnily enough, then, if that wide serve does come in, my reaction time is measurably faster for having thought about it prior to hitting it or prior to having to use it.
That's right.
Measurably faster.
Measurably. Like, you can do the data on this, and actually, it will be measured faster. That's what that means.
People have done studies on this stuff, right? They've measured reaction times of people, both with and without pre-activating the neural networks. And so this is why disguise and surprise are so important, is if I can surprise somebody, then their ability to have pre-activated their neural network, so to speak, or primed themselves or anticipated something ahead of time is gone.
Now, what happens if you're primed? Say you're anticipating a serve that's going out to your right, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you're primed out there and focused out there to the right, but then it doesn't go to your right, it goes to the left?
Bad things happen. It's so, the shorter. Oh, well, that actually happened to me in a match I played yesterday. You know, we're playing against this guy, and he's a lefty, but he just predominantly used the kick serve, and he'd been kicking a bunch kind of into my backhand body a whole lot, and I'm returning on the deuce side, and I'm just looking for that serve, and then all of a sudden on a big point out of nowhere, he hit a genuine slice right off the corner of the box up the middle. And I just wasn't looking. I mean, it was the same side, like it was still a backhand, but I just wasn't looking for that particular serve, and completely shanked the return, caught me completely off guard.
That little moment of hesitation that you describe, because let's be clear, it's just a moment.
Yes.
It's not like there's 3 seconds
of reaction. It's a fraction of a second.
It's a small, small fraction of a second. So that little moment can be the difference between essentially hitting a service winner and not. I mean, we're not talking about hitting aces where your opponent's 10 feet away from you, right? Like, we're talking about getting someone to miss, making good contact by a couple of inches, by a few centimeters. It's not that big of a change that we need to make in the opponent in order for them to miss. So this is why it's so important, if you understand what you're trying to do, not as just hitting a hole through your opponent or just beating them with sheer velocity. But if you understand it more like, I'm just trying to get them to miss hit the ball.
Yes.
They can hit it. I just don't want them to hit it clean.
Yeah, I don't want them to hit it well or where they want to. And that's, you know, so to put this in terms of second serving strategy or how an example of this related to second serve delivery, one example that will not be relevant to everybody, but I think the idea is. So my normal second serve is a pretty heavy kick serve that will have left to right movement from my perspective. So I'm a right-hander, I'm serving, the ball is going to bounce and actually move up and out to the right. That's my normal second serve. And so if I'm serving on the deuce court and I hit a kicker up the tee and that ball is going to kick a little bit left to right, you know, for most people that they're there and having to move to their left and stretch out to hit that ball. And if I hit two or three of those and they're good quality, people start having to anticipate it in order to make good contact. because it's kicking a lot, and it's not super slow. And so then what I can do, I'll do that two or three times, and I'm setting up a serve where I'm going to do exactly the same toss, and I'm going to hit the ball starting out exactly the same line, but instead of hitting a kicker that goes left to right, I'm going to hit a topspin slice that goes right to left. It's not really any faster. It's still getting up, but the movement of the ball is going to be in the exact opposite direction. And so what ends up happening is people start, they're anticipating that having to stretch and get that ball up high and away from them, and all of a sudden it spins in at their face. And I've literally, against high-level players, hit second serves. I had a guy once catch the ball. As in, he was getting ready to hit, and the ball spun in at his face, and he literally just let go of the racket with his left hand and caught the ball in front of his face because it was about to hit him.
One of my guys actually was playing in altitude a couple weeks ago, and he hit his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a top 200 guy, okay? Like, he's a baller. And the guy's good in altitude, and he got hit with a serve.
And are we talking like 130 mile an hour?
No, he got hit with a spinner. Like, it was a spinny serve. It was just like dancing in the air. He was leaning, expecting something else, and kind of leaned. Racket was on the wrong side of his body. He anticipated too quickly, and the next thing you know, boom, right off the shoulder. It was going at his face. He was able to move enough that it just clipped him off the shoulder.
Right.
But, I mean, when that happens, like, I mean, the guy wasn't in a service game for the next three games. Like, he was barely making balls for the next three games.
It's disconcerting.
It's so upsetting as a returner when you're at that level, because you feel like, this is what Kyrgios does so well to people.
Yeah.
He just makes you feel like, oh my God, I don't know what to do.
Yes, absolutely. And so one thing that I just really want to stress to everybody listening is you don't have to have Nick Kyrgios's command of serving in order to be able to employ these types of strategies. You know, the situation that I just described about that I utilize on my second serve of using the kicker and then the topspin slice, you don't have to have that level of command. As long as you have the ability to hit two different types of serve, they don't have to be the two that I just described about, but two different types of serve off the same ball toss, then you have the ability to disguise, you have then the ability to surprise, as long as you're being thoughtful and intentful about putting together sequences of serving and setting things up the right way.
You know, it's interesting that you said this way, and I'm you know, you might totally disagree with me for this, and I might get in trouble for saying it this way. But, you know, one of the guys in particular that I coach on the tour is known as a pretty good server, right? Like, that's the scouting report on him, is he's got a good serve. I actually actively tell him, you're not going to serve like Nick Kyrgios. He just can't serve that big. I mean, Kyrgios can serve huge, okay, huge. And what stands out about Kyrgios to me isn't actually his command, but just that he can miss his spot by 5-6 feet and he's still hitting a super high quality serve.
Right.
So what I actually tell the guys is, you're not going to serve as big as Nick, so what we have to do is work on the command. And sure. I know that this doesn't, this isn't undermining what you said at all, but I think of Nick as like, okay, he's the biggest server basically in the game. I mean, he's a huge server. Like, if you're an intermediate player or beginning player or any level player up to a pro, including a pro, you don't have to make your serve hugely bigger, and you certainly don't have to make it significantly bigger right now in order to win at the level that you're at, right? Well, what you can work on consistently is better command and better serving tactics,
right?
So that you can win immediately at that level,
right?
Right? So this goes way back to one of your questions earlier on about, okay, well, how does this really look when we start working with people? When you were describing your kick serves, saying, like, as a right-hander, you serve to the deuce side up the tee, your kicker is going into the ad court. I mean, I've seen it, mm-hmm. Okay? So, yeah, there's a lot of spin on it, but what does the spin do, right? Like, how does spin magically make the ball hard for your opponent to hit? What it does in this case for that kick serve for you, besides being unpredictable, is it makes your opponent physically have to move. Like, he's essentially hitting the return almost on the run now because he has to move so far. He can't just take one step and hit the return.
Right, sure.
Okay? So we talk about that as spreading the box,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, let's make this guy on the other side of the court have to cover more of the court.
Right.
And this is essentially, generally speaking, this is where we start with most people. With like 90% of people, it's, okay, it might take you a while to add 10 miles, 20 miles, 30 miles an hour to your serve, however many you need to add. For the pro guys, they're not adding any velocity to their serve. They just have to get better serves.
Right. Well, better location, whatever.
Exactly. Better location, better spin, and specifically better command.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. Like, I'm not talking about, when I reference like Nick Kyrgios and his command of the serve, I'm not talking about how big it is. Ironically, I'm more talking about the fact that he can hit virtually every variation of his serve that he has off of either the same toss or two or three different tosses. Like, he can move his toss around. Yeah. He could throw up what most people would hit a very heavy kick serve off of, and he can absolutely blast at 130. But then he can also, off that same toss, hit two or three different variations of spin, you know?
That's right.
That's when I talk about command, what I'm really talking about is disguise as much as anything. Like, the ability to hit different serves off the same toss, different types of spin off the same toss. So it's not just like, well, I'm going to serve wide, so I'm going to throw it further out to the right and hit my slice serve and come around it.
Please don't do that.
No, it's like, I'm going to throw it to the same toss, and off that same toss, I could hit a topspin slice wide. I could hit it flat and hard down the tee. I could hit an actual kick serve up the tee. I can hit all these different serves to every different part of the box off the same toss. If you work towards developing the ability to do that, then your effectiveness at serving, if you compare that with a cohesive serving strategy, will be significantly greater than if you take, you know, your two different ball tosses, one for your first serve, one for your second serve, and learn how to hit your quote-unquote first serve a little bit harder. Your gains on that are going to be much lower than if you learn how to hit all, like, variations of spins and locations off the same toss.
That's right. And that's where we start, okay? I mean, the way that you're talking about this, like, this is what actually happens when we're out there is we basically say, you're going to win a lot more, a lot faster if you have some disguise.
Yes.
So let's find where you can serve well with some disguise, mm-hmm. and let's basically build from there, okay? And this goes back to the psychology, right? Like, disguise is going to be more effective unless you're talking about adding, like, some insane amount of insane amount of velocity to your serve, right? And realistically, like, you're probably serving about as hard as you can serve and, you know, have some success. Like, I've never seen anybody go out there and serve 80 miles an hour when really they could serve 110 the whole time and they just weren't doing it.
Well, I mean, I do when people can't make the 110 mile an hour serve at one time out of 10.
Well, that's right. So, you know, making one out of 10 isn't going to be helpful. But when they start using a consistent motion, having a consistent toss, hitting with some disguise, and when they develop command from that consistent position where they have disguise, then every time you add an element, like, well, I can spread the box a little bit more now, maybe out wide on the ad side, or maybe out wide on the deuce side. Maybe you only add, you know, a meter. It doesn't have to be a ton,
no.
But it can be a huge difference in the level of their service games. Like, it can open up two or three more shots and ultimately open up a dozen more patterns.
Absolutely.
Which completely makes them a different server to face, right? Yes. Without actually changing their whole serve. So, like we started this off by saying, hey, don't think about your second serve the way you've been thinking about your second serve. I would kind of say we get to this point where don't think about what you need to change about your serve, probably the way that you've been thinking about it. It might not need to get that much better if you can use it much smarter.
Yes. And so I think ultimately, there's one thing that you take away from today, it's to shift your understanding of serving to away from this idea of I have a first serve and I have a second serve to this. You have options available to you regardless of the serving situation, whether it is your first serve on the deuce court or second serve on the air court. You have different options available to you. What you want to be doing is making good choices and putting together strategies using those options appropriately in different situations to get the most out of the serve that you have in every match that you play. And hopefully that helps clarify a little more about the where second serving fits in the serving strategy, and that it should be a part of your overall serving strategy. But if it doesn't and you have questions, you can reach out to us. You can email me at glenn@tacticaltennis.com.
And I'm Jacob@tacticaltennis.com and on Twitter at tacticaltennis.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Glenn S. Hill. And if you haven't already, please go to iTunes or whatever podcasting app you use and rate the show. It is helpful, and you know, we don't spend money on advertising. So share with your friends and family and people that that play tennis. Probably don't share with friends and family who don't play tennis. They might not like it so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.